This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. For more than 20 years, helping Americans plan their retirement years with confidence. And now, today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, April 24th edition of Invest Talk, and this is 2017. And we are here to help smart people invest in today's market. Try to smarten you up as much as we possibly can. And you know what that means depends on who you ask and whether you admit to being smart or not. You know, a smart person in their 20s is going to be invested in an entirely different way than a person probably closer to retirement. That's a general rule of thumb. Might not always be the case, and you have to really understand what that what those caveats are. Now, the question is, where are the smart people invested? It's suggested based on there's no secret formula. There's no particular view of the market that leads them to a single sector. It's really just having a perspective that is dynamic and flexible, and having a full understanding of what you're getting into. Right? It's not about the shiny objects and the exciting story. It's about having a broad view of different asset classes, the economy, individual companies, individual sectors, and really getting a grasp of where we are today and how does that fit into your road, right? Your road towards whatever those goals are. How can you use the opportunities today to get you where you want to be? Now, first of all, the smart person is going to be diversified in some way, whether that's between asset classes, which is probably the best type of diversification, and then within asset classes, because not all stocks are the same. You don't want to always be in certain sector of the market. You don't want to be in only high yield bonds. You probably want to diversify. You don't want to bet the farm in any one stock or single sector. Now, you have to make choices among, should you use funds to get access or exposure to particular areas of the marketplace? Meaning, are you using mutual funds and ETFs to get exposure? Maybe in a place where you don't really have specific expertise, but no, you know, this is an area that I want to have some exposure to. And then you can buy individual bonds or individual stocks. And that takes a little more expertise. Maybe you want to own individual commodities. You want to put that in your safe at home. That can be a part of your portfolio, a part of your strategy, a part of your diversification. And our goal here each and every weekday is to give you some understanding of what the pros and the cons of all of those are. And that's why we accept your calls and try to answer your questions as much as we possibly can, as well as hosting webinars, which we're going to be starting to do a little more often, once a month. And coming up this week on our Invest Talk Live Wealth webinar called Fundamental and Technical Analysis, Back to Basics, we're going to share some techniques to help you in that filtering process. One of the sections of the hour will focus on how to screen for attractive stocks, how to employ a filter, and what are the pros and cons of the free filters that are out there, because there are some. We'll show you how to set the parameters for your search, what may be the pros and cons, and then you can save it and go back to it on a regular basis. And this will help you find a group of companies that will match your particular criteria of whatever you're looking for. Income stocks, growth stocks, value stocks, small cap, large cap. So we're going to go over that in this hour, along with talking about chart patterns and what chart patterns mean, how you can identify them, and give you a little more familiarity with that part of the analysis. But most of it's going to focus on fundamental analysis, selecting individual stocks for investment, and we're going to show you how to get some good perspective on these particular investments based on the filters that we're going to build for you and show you how to build them. So we want to get you the knowledge and the access to keep up to date and have the most up-to-date list of stocks that you can filter through in a more qualitative way as well. And we're going to go over that of how do you think about this list. You know, a lot of people just want to have a set it and forget it filter, but that's not the end of it either. And we're going to go over why and what you can do to help filter through that list of stocks that you get. Now, you need as much data and as many choices as possible to make a good decision, but you can get buried in it as well. And that's where what we're going to be talking about on Wednesday really comes in. And it's easy to use the screener, but it's a lot harder to really physically filter out the good investments from the bad, the great values from the value traps. So like I said, we're going to look at large cap stocks, small cap stocks, companies that have fallen on hard times, others that might be at all-time highs. And we're also going to show you some metrics that probably you're not thinking about, okay, that most people look at P ratios and very simple metrics, and we're going to go over those. But we're going to go into some more advanced ones that really matter much, much more that you can take back and use in your work. And we're going to have a list of 10 metrics that we think are very, very important. And we're going to leave you that with a list of that if you show up, and you'll get that document emailed to you. So we'll help you find some ways to screen these stocks during this webinar. And we're going to go over charting and different types of metrics that matter most. So if you want to sign up, just go to investtalk.com. You can sign up for free. And there will be time for questions as well. This will probably last about 45 to 50 minutes for the actual presentation, and then about 10 to 15 minutes of Q&A time as well. All right. I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our number, so check into our 24-hour listener line. And this question, actually, we're going to go to a live caller with Judy in Castro Valley. How are you doing, Judy?
Good, Justin. Thanks for a great show.
Thanks for making it.
I had a quick question, and I wanted to get your opinion on Whole Foods.
Okay.
So the stock has rallied quite a bit in recent weeks, and I got in at around 28. And I was hoping to hold on to it until October to get the long-term capital gains rate.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if the downside risk is a little too high at this point.
I actually don't think so. It had a pretty decent spike middle of the day today because Albertsons is talking about possibly buying them. They failed in their bid for Sprouts Market.
Yeah.
Now, do I think Albertsons is going to buy them? Probably not. That's just a rumor. But now that Jana Partners is in there, they're a big hedge fund that kind of will shake up management and really, I think, do their best to streamline their business. Because I think what's happened is that Whole Foods has grown and grown and grown. And the reason why they call it Whole Paycheck is because it just hasn't been run like an efficient business. It's been focused more on the products, and that's great. You know, and that's why people love going there, is because they have unique and good quality products. But I think they can. The bigger chains have shown that you can still have organic products, good quality products in your stores, but get them at good prices and sell them at relatively decent prices because of the efficiencies that these large stores know how to create over the decades that they've been in business. Where Whole Foods, you know, they've only been really big for the past 10 or 15 years. And what's going to happen, I think, is This is just the start of either Jana and other investment firms coming in and pushing management to make changes, make their company more efficient and thus more profitable, turn the business around a little bit, become more competitive in the marketplace from a pricing standpoint. So I think that's either that's going to happen or they're just simply going to be bought out. And honestly, I think they're going to be bought out. If they get bought out, it's probably going to be north of $45 a share. So the trends in Whole Foods are fine. You know, we're in it around the same price as you are as well. And we have seen no reason to take profits yet. We're continuing to hold on to it, collect the nice. Now it's about a 1.5% dividend on where we, you and I got into it. We're probably around a 2% dividend yield. And, you know, hold on, collect that until you're to your long term. And I think between now and October, it'll probably be higher. It will be a lot higher. Okay. I'm not sure. Will it be bought out by then? I don't know. But I see no reason to cut your winnings short at this point. I really don't think the downside is much. Could it fall back to 30? Maybe. And that's if Jana really gets out and everyone abandons it for whatever reason. But I see no reason for that to happen in the near term. So I would hold it and definitely keep it through October.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
No problem, Judy. Thanks for calling. That was Whole Foods Market. WFM is the symbol. Trading at about 30. Where did it close today? $36.50. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. What can we talk about today that'd be really important to you? We can talk stocks, bonds, precious metals, real estate, interest rates, the economy as a whole, the Fed, President Trump and his policies, whatever you want to talk about. Whatever important money topics that have an impact on your daily life, we are open for discussion. 888-99-CHART is our live listener line every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time.
Hi, Steve. My name is Michael. I'm 26 years old, and I'm pretty new to investing. Well, brand new. I don't know much at all. I started researching and listening to some podcasts, and I figured I'd ask you and get some help. It may be a long answer, but I'm looking to invest maybe $1,000 to $2,000 in possibly stock or an account, and was wondering if you can give me some tips and or what I should put my money into. I really would appreciate your feedback, and thanks.
All right, you're just getting started. So the answer is you should probably put your money in nothing at this point. You don't have a lot of experience. And, you know, you could open a Robinhood app and maybe buy the S&P 500 index. SPY is the ETF. That might be the most basic way to start. And I probably wouldn't go much beyond that. I see a lot of people trying to get into investing and they really just get in to get in. And usually that's a mistake. Usually they're not understanding the risks that are involved. And that's why I say I default to not doing nothing yet. Until you understand, okay, what is a stock? What is the difference between a large cap and a small cap stock? A growth stock versus a value stock? A dividend payer versus a non-dividend payer? What are certain metrics that you have to look at? Trends, find places to get this information. And then you have to understand what type of risk level you're willing and able to take. Okay, and then what type of assets match up with that? What is in between a high yield bond fund and an investment grade bond fund and a government bond fund? Okay, what's short and long term? So these are all just getting to know the extreme basics of all of this. What I just talked about was the overall basics lesson 101. And you need to probably get to lesson 401, 501 before you really move on. So go to our website. There's a book section. There's a bunch of books there that you can order and read. And that's where I would start and just keep accumulating cash until you feel absolutely comfortable with what you are doing. Take your time. Don't rush into it. This is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. 8899 chart is how to reach me right now. This is InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, our main talking point is about the best funds for your 401k. And the 401k has become the default savings vehicle when it comes for retirement because of the tax-deferred nature of the account, the fact that you tend to get some sort of match from your employer, which creates instant return on your money, whether 50% or 100%, and that's guaranteed money, and that's money that, or that's a return you're not going to get anywhere else on a guaranteed basis. So it's a great investment vehicle, great investment account to use. And the problem is that tend to have a list of mutual funds that may be okay, maybe bad, maybe they're rarely ever all good. And so you're forced to pick from an odd lot of mismatch of funds that could be good, could be bad, right? Now, most people would say that using index funds is the best strategy. And that's been the default mantra now for the last few years. And I talk, if you listen to the show for any length of time, I think everybody should understand about that is that everybody is buying into this mantra. And when you see everyone buying into a certain mantra, I tend to go, I probably wouldn't do that. Because if history is any guide, it tells you that when everybody and their mother is invested a certain way, you should probably be invested the opposite way. And that's why I'm fearful, not fearful, but worried about index funds and people getting over-indexed, where everything they own is an index fund. And index funds work great during trending markets. And that's what we've had for 8 years, right? A positively trending market for the most part. But in flat markets and in bear markets, indexes actually work terribly. So these things go in cycles, and something you have to understand. Now, that doesn't mean you don't index at all, but what you have to understand is the type of funds that you use and which index funds make the most sense. Large cap funds, if the statistics show that indexing works the best for large cap stocks. When you start going into mid cap, small cap, and into foreign names, indexing works a lot less. When you start getting into bond funds, indexing works horribly. Okay? So understanding where you should be indexing and where maybe you should be looking for active funds is very, very important as well. But ultimately, it's really about your asset allocation and serving the right purpose for you. Are you close to retirement? Are you far away? What type of risk tolerance do you have? Obviously, equity funds are going to be the most volatile, but have the best long-term return. Then you get into long-term bond funds is probably next on that scale from a risk and reward standpoint. And then more the total bond market, which includes intermediate bonds and short-term bonds, you might get those type of options in your plan. That's next on the list. And then there'll be money markets or stable value, etc. And then lastly, targeted funds. Are those really right for you? And that's probably another area where I go, probably not. Okay? So, and the reason is because it's pigeonholing you into one particular type of strategy or one particular fund family, which is never a great idea. So, picking the right funds is very difficult. I'll say that. There's no one size fits all. That's one reason why we have our active 401k program, is because it can analyze every plan out there and really give a sense of where you should be. And that's why we utilize it for our clients and our listeners. So it's a difficult task. I understand it's a very imperfect industry, very imperfect model when it comes to saving for retirement. But if you have a 401k, so something you're going to have to deal with. Let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question at 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number.
Hi. I just want to start off by saying I love the show. I'm an avid listener, and I listen to the podcast. I think what you guys are doing is absolutely great. My question is in concern to the stock Rite Aid, R-A-D. And I was wondering, especially with yesterday, with it having the huge decrease going from about $4.50 a share to about $4.08 is what it closed at. And then after hours market, it went down to $4.05. If now would be an even better time to invest in the stock, especially with the FTC deal going through. It seems like the FTC threatening to sue just seems like a bunch of rumors going around that shouldn't actually be reliable. And I feel like the price of the stock is actually really undervalued. Thanks. I'll be listening on the next podcast.
All right. I'm not super familiar with the Rite Aid story, but most people know Rite Aid is their big pharmaceutical chain. What company's trying to buy them? I believe it's Walgreens is trying to buy them. And I'm not super familiar with what's going on with that deal because we're not invested in either of them. But I do know that Rite Aid has a lot of debt. And that really worries me, and that's why it's falling apart. Because their cash flow has gone negative. Their business is really going south, and they have a lot of debt. So they really need this acquisition to go through. So if it doesn't, then I would be very worried. I would not invest in Rite Aid. If for some reason you have confidence that they will go through with the acquisition, then I would buy it because it will definitely rebound. But I don't really have a sense of that. So be very careful with it. And we're at the halfway mark of this Wednesday Invest Talk. I want to hear from you at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next, but first a reminder about our April 26th webinar. It's called Fundamental and Technical Analysis, Back to the Basics. We're going to talk about the metrics that matter most and how to screen for attractive stocks. It's a chance for the hands-on investor to hone their analytical skills, help you identify chart patterns that work in today's market. Join registered investment advisors Justin Klein and Jason Toper Wednesday, April 26th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. It's free, but attendance is limited. So sign up soon. Just go to investtalk.com. That's InvestTalk with two T's. And click on the InvestTalk tab. And now we continue with today's podcast. Invest Talk continues, and next time, last year, $178 billion was removed from equity products, but $26 billion went into dividend-focused funds. So what's wrong with the dividend-paying mutual fund? That's tomorrow. We still have time today for your question on any money topic. Call us at 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's take a quick look at the market today. We had the Dow up 216 points. The S&P was up 25. And the NASDAQ was up about 73. Big day on the markets. And this was on the back of what was pretty pretty expected that the French election was going to Marine Le Pen was going to come in second in the French election, or at least in the top two, and that's what happened. And now there's a runoff with Macron. I can't remember how to say it exactly on May 7th, and it's widely expected that Le Pen is going to lose to Macron. Like I said, I think that's how you say it. And that's why the market really is happy, because the outcome is, even though Le Pen's still in it, the odds are heavily against her that she's actually going to get through. It's a complex system they have over there in France, especially with there was four main candidates, and you the top two who get the most votes have a runoff, and that's, like I said, May 7th. And the market's very happy about that, because Le Pen means if Le Pen wins, which is still possible, but very unlikely according to markets and bookies and, you know, odds makers. If she won, she would probably take France out of the EU, which would be another shot across the bow for the breakup of the EU. It would be the first member of the EU that uses euros to leave the EU, obviously. The UK, they're leaving the European Union, but they still use the British pound. So it'd be kind of a different situation. France is one of the largest economies in the EU as well. So that would be an event that would be unnerving to the markets. And because the outcome seems to be that Le Pen, while still in it, won't win, the markets rallied on the back of that. Now we're still in the middle of earnings season. Earnings seem to be okay. Nothing spectacular. Nothing to that's probably going to kill the market. And I think that's more important than these gyrations that you're seeing right now. And we remain, even though we have the NASDAQ kind of reached new highs, but most other indexes and indicators show that we remain in the trading range that really started in December. We've been going sideways ever since. And are we going to break out based on some changes in the news around the Trump agenda, or are we going to break down after the market kind of gives up on the Trump agenda getting passed? You know, we're about near the 100-day mark on the Trump presidency, and healthcare still doesn't look anywhere close to being resolved. And how long will the market be patient for will be very, very interesting as well. 888-99 chart is our number, 888-992-4278. Now let's take a quick look at the housing market and where we are today. You know, rates have gone up a little bit, although they've kind of come back. They hit about 4.25% in the 30-year. Now we're back down to about 4%. And a lot of people are probably still saying, oh, that's a little high. But in reality, if you look at the history of the market, 4% is extremely low 30-year mortgage rate. And there was a report that came out last week that there was a strong report for existing home sales in March. And it looks nice. It looks good. However, the broader picture indicates some concern about affordability, which will likely limit price appreciation. You're not going to see an acceleration in price appreciation until affordability kind of catches up. And long-term housing prices are about near where they are, or fair value relative to rents and personal income compared to those long-term averages. And if you look at inflation-adjusted disposable income, there's a deceleration, which suggests that if that continues, housing will actually become overvalued because rents will have to drop and obviously personal incomes will drop, and that will put pressure on housing prices to the downside. Now, sales of previously owned homes jumped 4.4% last month, and that was better than expected. And it pushed it to the highest level of existing home sales in this cycle. And the inventory remains scarce. Homes are still pretty much flying off the shelves at only 34 days on market. That's very, very, very fast. Now, sales in the West actually were the weakest out here in the West, in California on the West Coast, about 1.6% drop year over year. Now, what's also interesting is that new listings are starting to perk up. And while the pace of sales gotten a little faster, new listings started to perk up, and that really kept the number of months on inventory, about 3.8 months, about flat. And that means that, and that's still near historic lows, so there's really no pressure on the inventory side, which is interesting still. But if there continues to be this influx of new listings, you will likely see that 3.8 months start to rise. And once you get over about 6 or 7 months of inventory, that's where you start seeing potential price depreciation. And I'm still a believer that now is a much better time to sell than it is to buy. But I don't think you're going to see a rollover in the housing market anytime soon, unless the mortgage rate really takes off again. You know, I've said this before, about 5% on the 30-year is probably where things get real dicey, right? Where affordability really is stretched. And we're not there yet because rates have backed off to about the 4% level. But, you know, further acceleration in housing and the housing market is likely to be limited because of the affordability issue, deterioration affordability, and decelerating income growth. And obviously, prices continue to rise slightly as well. So all of those create a housing market that remains overbought, remains, you know, at or above, you know, fair value, and certainly susceptible to any potential economic or market shocks. Now, a reminder to sign up for our free webinar, Fundamental and Technical Analysis, Back to Basics. It's coming up 2 days from now. 2 days from now. That's this Wednesday, April 26th at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. It'll be an hour-long webinar. It is free, but you do need to sign up, and space is limited. But registration is open now on investtalk.com, so why not sign up? Did I mention it's free?
If you live near San Ramon in Northern California, Steve will be there for individual retirement reviews on April 25th. But if you're not near our California offices, Steve can meet with you via Skype or telephone. Just go to investtalk.com and set up a time. Click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review.
Hey, Steve, Justin, I am a podcast listener from Dallas, Texas. Really enjoy your show, and I just had a question. Wanted to get your feedback, your thought on what you thought about the divergence between the hard and soft data that we're getting, the consumer confidence and expectation for the future outlook. And I just wanted to know how you thought that was going to be resolved. Are we going to see the hard data lift to the upside to catch up with the soft data? Or are we going to see the soft data turn over and peter out? So just wanted to get your opinion, because a lot of people seem to be talking lately about hard and soft data. So just wanted to know what you thought. Let me know. Thanks. Bye.
It's a great question. And at first, I want to clarify what the difference between soft and hard data is for everybody else. And if you skip these economic reports that come out, right? And some of them are actually only surveys, right? Surveys of consumer confidence, for example, meaning how are people feeling about the current and future economic prospects. There's also surveys of business, like the ISM Manufacturers Report. That's a survey of wholesalers and how they think their business is going to be going forward. So there's different types of soft data that are really just based on opinions and feelings and surveys. And they tend to be correct, because people tend to be pretty honest when it comes to this, especially when you smooth the data and you're surveying thousands of people. And, you know, it's really about feelings, okay? Then there's hard data, which is what are actual economic activities in the marketplace? How are they looking, right? And that's hard, because you know that, right, a contract or a home sale is something that actually happened, right? A product being sold is actually something that happened. A product being produced is actually something that happened. So there's these different types of reports that come out. Some are soft, some are hard data. And ever since the election, the soft data has really jumped in a strong way, meaning the expectations from the consumer and business leaders are high and optimistic, and they feel great. Now, obviously, business leaders, they tend to be more Republican. They tend to be more about the business climate and Trump being president versus Hillary Clinton is, in their eyes, something that is beneficial for their business because of lower regulation, which he's promised, lower taxes, which he's promised, right? He's healthcare reform, getting rid of Obamacare, which has been a burden for a lot of businesses. So that really pushes on the soft data when it comes to business owners. And then there's the consumer side, where I'm sure there were some people who really are scared of Trump and less optimistic about their prospects. But think of all the Republican side who, you know, for the most part, they haven't really liked Obama, and they've talked about how terrible he's been. Everyone hated him. On that side, on the right. And then all of a sudden Trump gets elected, and all of a sudden all of those people are now probably very, very optimistic about the positive changes that Trump is going to have towards the economy. And sure, there's some on the other side who loved Obama and now hate Trump and are less optimistic. But overall, that's been more of a positive thing for the the aggregate surveys when it comes to consumer confidence. So those have done really, really well, but the hard data has not kept up. In fact, in a way, it's rolling over, and now soft data starts to, starting to roll over now that partly seeing the hard data be weak, and then the fact that Trump is having difficulty really getting traction with his agenda and getting it passed in a timely manner. Not to say it will never get passed, but it certainly doesn't look like it's on the fast track of becoming law. So I actually think that the survey will roll over harder than the soft data will roll over harder than the hard data will rise, right? So I think it's more likely that the GDP in the first quarter is sub 1%, around the 1% level, which is still very, very low. And eventually the soft data will catch up to that. 888-99 chart is our number, 888-992-4278. We have 10 minutes left in the show. So if you want to get your call in, you need to do it sooner rather than later. 888-99-CHART is that number. Now, 18 months ago, there was a company called BP, and it was a rapidly expanding online used car business across 16 cities in the U.S. where people could go and buy used cars at fairly low prices. And they raised a lot of money just a few years ago. And today they don't exist. And this is an example of once really hot startups starting to crash and burn. And this reminds me a lot of Tech Bubble 1.0, where you started to see some smaller companies go bust first and go out of business. And eventually that spread into kind of the larger companies, into the equity markets. And this is, to me, the start of and I've said this for about a year now, I see cracks in Tech Bubble 2.0. And I think those cracks are starting to get a little wider, starting to get a little bigger, and a little more noticeable. And this is a really interesting article. It was in the Wall Street Journal today. And it talks about BP and not BP, the oil company, BP, B-E-E-P-I is how you spell it. And their rapid demise, and it shows the changing fortunes of Silicon Valley. Now, in 2014 and 15, you had mutual funds, hedge funds, other large investment firms going out there and pumping billions of dollars in companies that, you know, they were overvalued, but they thought that they would eventually go IPO and cash out big time. And so after the break, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this trend and where I see it spreading in the future, and whether that's later this year, next year, or the year after. It's probably within the next few years. And but I'm going to talk about where the money is still flowing and where you're likely to see more and more busts. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. You help us keep it real with your questions. We want to know what is on your mind. We can still fit your question in for this hour if you want. We have 8 more minutes left in the show, so give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is George from Rhode Island. My father has a real estate investment trust, a REIT, and it's in a company called CIM, and it pays about a 10% dividend, and he's had it for a few years, and it's went up pretty good. My question to you is, what would stop somebody from taking a home equity loan at 3 to 4% and taking that money, say $100,000, and investing into a REIT like that where you're getting 10%? Sounds logical to me, where you're paying out 3.4% in interest and you're getting 10% return on a REIT. Appreciate your answer. Thank you.
All right, that's an interesting question. Well, first off, what you have to understand is he's looking at Chimera Investments, which is a mortgage REIT. Okay, it's a mortgage REIT, and they invest in mortgages. They're kind of like, think of them as a bank very focused on the mortgage market, kind of like a savings and loan, right? So they do have some leverage involved in what they do. And there is risk. That's why you don't do it, is because there's a good amount of risk in this type of name. And you might not think so, but you're only looking at the most recent past performance. And if you go back to, say, 2000 and, let's see, 2008, and while I don't think we're going to have a crash like that, this was as high as almost $100 a share, and it crashed down to as low as $12 a share. And there's certain, if there's a downturn in the housing market, and which, you know, I don't think is imminent or anything like that, if interest rates start to spike and their funding costs for their mortgages start to go up, suddenly their profits could shrink dramatically, and they could reduce their dividend payout, which would also reduce the price of the shares, right? Because the market would adjust for that. And so the price would likely decline as well. So your principal would be eroded. Your dividend might also be eroded as well. So the main answer to your question is, this is a risky investment. And in some ways, it's a pretty high-risk investment because the dynamics in the market can change rather quickly, and they can on both ways as well. I mean, this is a high in 2014, about $17 a share. Early 2006, it hit a low of $12 a share, right? Went down 30-40%. And this isn't – they have debt. It's not a company that – it may never go out of business. It could. If there's some sort of big downturn and increase in defaults again in the housing market, you go into recession or something like that. So don't think this is a riskless investment, because it absolutely in no way, shape, or form is it a riskless investment. And you need to understand that. So try to heed my caution. Let's go to Michael in San Jose.
Hey, Justin, I've got a question. What are your thoughts on symbol MU, Micron Technology?
Okay. What are you own it? Are you looking to buy it?
I bought some today.
Okay. You know, it's honestly, it's looking a little weak to me from a short term, and it's up into a lot of resistance over the long term. If you look at the fundamentals, they're not attractive. It's a operating earnings yield is about 4.6%, and while their revenue's growing, doesn't look like their profit is keeping up with that same type of growth. And so, you know, I don't love it, to be honest with you. To be honest with you, I would not hold it for long if I were you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Michael. And lastly, I want to talk a little bit about what I was discussing before the break of how there's a lot of companies that are finally going bankrupt. In 2014 and 15, 5,000 U.S. tech startups collectively raised $75 billion. Now, that was the largest amount in any two-year period since the dot-com boom. Repeat, the dot-com boom. These things repeat themselves. 294 of those companies, of the largest companies that raised 294 of those companies raised $50 million a piece or more, and only about three quarters of those, about 216, still haven't raised money since then. And most tech startups, they're burning cash, and meaning most of these that raise $50 million or more, they're either still holding on to that cash and trying to hang on, or they likely will go bankrupt because they just can't raise more cash in the near term. So the tech bubble 2.0 is the cracks in it are starting to spread. So be aware. Now, it looks like we're done for this hour. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. You can reach me directly with a question or comment. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Contact Justin button, and I'll get back to you. On behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for being with us. Let's plan on getting together tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-400-8400. 855-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.